This episode of Section D was first broadcast on the 29th of September 2015 on Monocle 24. Section D on Monocle 24 in association with Squarespace. Hello and welcome to Section D. It's going to be me, David Pleasant, bringing you the show today. In this episode, we look back at the week that was, as London closes the doors of its biggest ever design festival. We'll be meeting some of the very varied designers and participants that made LDF what it was. A new chair by Japanese designer Tomoko Azumi that's kept British furniture maestro Urquhart sitting pretty.
I wanted to show the technique which Urquhart has been developing for years and years. So that was the beginning of the idea that I want to use smooth bench into chair.
And we speak to a young Greek about her country's budding design brands and how to ensure that they get the right sort of attention in London this year.
There is an entrepreneurial spirit that is rising, especially through young people right now in Greece. And this is the main reason that motivated us, because we wanted this to be diffused outside Greece.
Plus, we'll take you on a journey to explore the graphic legacy of that most refined of roadside objects, the British street sign, at an exhibition that celebrates the iconic design's 50th anniversary. In addition, we stop off in Vienna to preview the city's emerging design scene and check in on the challenges of this crowded market. All that to come today on Section D, Monocle 24's dedicated design show. First up on the show, we sit down to consider the humble chair. One tongue-in-cheek way to tease a design aficionado is to question the industry's ongoing obsession with chairs. But like it or not, the chair is a vital part of everyday life, and last week at London Design Festival, we came across a new model worth ruminating on. The flow chair from British furniture manufacturer Urquhart by Japanese designer and architect Tomoko Azumi. I took a seat with Tomoko to admire her ingeniously curved creation. I also spoke to Urquhart chairman Edward Tatras and mulled over the shapely and stackable chair's capacity to be a future classic for the brand.
My name is Tomoko Azumi. We are sitting on the flow chair which I designed for Urquhart. And then we are now at the breakfast under sunlight at Margaret Havers on Wigmore Street.
A wonderful sunny morning on these lovely new chairs that are inspired in part by the Urquhart heritage or some of the signature curvatures of Urquhart, but they've gone a long lot further than that. You were describing to me earlier with a series of three maquettes, the process. How did you begin? What was the brief?
The brief is to design a comfortable chair for a dining area in a sort of urban environment. So it has to be compact. And then I wanted to show the quality and technique which Urquhart has been developing for years and years. So this steam bent bowl of beechwood, which are comb jointed in a smooth way. So that was the beginning of the idea that I want to use this element of flow, smooth bend into chair.
And the bend is really quite extreme. Our listeners can see wonderful pictures on our website or in our magazine. But can we describe technically the challenges of this quite extreme curve? How did you manage that? And perhaps some of the dialogue that you had with the technicians and the craftsmen?
This bow, the bent wood, started from back leg and then goes up to your little arm rest and then around your body.
And around your back and then?
And then goes back to the another leg. So which is one sort of line from floor, goes rise up and then goes onto the floor again. So this was born through the discussion with technicians that they wanted the challenge of the quite tight bend. And then every time that I discover what is the ultimate sort of technique they can do, which other company cannot follow, I'm kind of adopted that back to design of the chair And there are lots of back and forth discussions about it, of technicality and then in the style. So then this design is a result of this long discussion and development.
And finally, we're now sitting on the chair. It's been a long process. What's your impression now? Any surprises if you look back to when you first engaged in this project and what you thought the chair might be and now what it looks like? What's your main sort of surprise?
In a way, this result of this, the design of the chair was born through this development and conversation. In a way, it's a bit far from what I originally thought. And then this is a lot better than what I originally thought. Now I want customers to test them in their homes and restaurants. Now is the time for the test for the long life design from now on, I hope. And then we aimed that they last long, not just instant style, but alongside with other products of Accor, they...
A heritage piece. You want it to be a vintage of the future.
Yes, that's right. Part of the long heritage. That's what I'm proud of and then glad about it right now. After this process, they look like Accor chair.
My name is Edward Tadros. I'm chairman of Accor Furniture. We're gathered here to show the press and the world some new pieces we're doing, particularly this flow chair, designed by Tomoko Azumi for us, which is this lovely bent beech frame, very light and elegant stacks. And we've got also some other pieces, a Nest sofa, we call it the Nest, by Paola Navoni, and a chair by one of our own in-house designers, Dylan Freeth, our Merino easy chair.
I want to kind of touch on that subject of aesthetics and sort of sensibility. And I mean, many of our listeners will know Accor. Such is the fame and reputation of your brand. But if you wanted to kind of sum it up, and Margaret Howell and her brand is perhaps a good place to start. How do you describe your brand and what is your aesthetic?
It's a lot of things, probably. I suppose it's about quality. It's about beautiful design, about longevity. People talk about the mid-century vogue or fashion. I don't think it's a fashion. I think it's the designs are a classic and very, very long-lasting. And you see it all over the place. You see the Carl Hansen chairs, and there's a lot of classic pieces have this enormous lifespan. And it's something to do with the simplicity of the design, the functionality, I suppose. They really work. You know, they're comfortable and durable. Like Margaret's clothes, I think. They're understated, is probably a bit unfair, because they're very beautiful, but they're very functional, lovely colours, very simple.
That was me there speaking to Accor chairman Edward Tatras, and before that, the designer of the new flow chair, Tomoko Azumi, at last week's London Design Festival. This is Section D with me, David Pleasant. Now, next up, we celebrate the 50th anniversary of British signage design. Launched in 1965, the UK road signs designed by Jock Kinnear and Margaret Calvert were amongst the first to use a standardised shape and colour system, as well as a purpose-made font named, rather appropriately, Transport. The iconic rounded hooks and fat finials of the font and unmistakable clarity of the signage have changed little over the past 50 years and are currently being celebrated in a new exhibition at London's Design Museum. Monocle's Bill Lutie journeyed to meet designer Jock Kinnear's son, Ross, and the curator of the exhibition, Patrick Murphy, to learn a little more about where British road signs have been and where they're going.
Well, the project is a celebration, really, of 50 years of the British road sign, which was designed by Margaret Calvert and Jock Kinnear. So that first appeared on British streets in January 1965. So the project that we see here tonight is a celebration of that, really. So we've invited leading designers, artists, including Sir Peter Blake, Julian Opie, Sir Terence Conran, everybody from the design and art community, really, to do their own interpretation of a road sign. The only part of the brief was really to reinterpret the circle, triangle, or a square. And then the results that we're looking at tonight at the Design Museum are based on that brief, really.
And how many designers were involved in it?
Well, we initially invited about 85 designers, thinking that there would be a few of them that couldn't do it, and then we would have 50. But because I think a lot of designers hold Margaret and Jock's work in such high regard, there wasn't very many people who actually turned us down. So now we've got 85 signs. But yeah, it's been a fantastic project. I think the response from the design and art community has been fantastic, really.
And what do you think it is about these signs? I mean, obviously people use them every day, but you don't really realise you're using them. What is it about them that people feel so connected to them?
I think in many ways, looking at what Margaret intended to do, because Margaret drew the pictograms, so all the figures that we see, you know, the children, roadworks, I think they're imbued with character, you know, almost friendliness. So I guess it's almost like Lady Bird books, or, you know, that kind of Britishness that's kind of conveyed in graphic form. And I think it's just a very simple, direct nature that she created and Jock created in the projects, really. The almost timeless nature of them, that they're 50 years old. But if you think of especially graphic design, some graphic design that's 50 years old actually looks 50 years old. And, you know, Margaret's and Jock's designs don't, actually. They're pretty timeless, really. But they intended it to work in a British landscape. When they were initially designing it, they were going to use a German font. And they tried it out in British landscape, and it just didn't work. So they designed Transport, and they also designed a typeface called Motorway. It's also friendlier, really. You know, if you see a nicely set, very curvy letter like Transport is, I think people have a warmth to it. And I think genuinely tonight, you know, all the designers and artists here tonight, there is a genuine warmth to Margaret's and Jock's work, really. And I think that's a great testament to the work that they did.
My name's Ross Kinnear, and Jock, who designed the signs with Margaret, was my father.
How do you see the legacy of the designs he did for the British Road Sign?
He would be very interested to be here tonight, seeing all these up-to-date people doing their versions of the signs. He was a quiet analyst and came up with design solutions to problems. And I think that whilst he started life as an illustrator, his ability to refine a design solution was really good. And what he came up with, well, you can see around you that it's lasted.
And I've been reading about the signs and the original designs of them, and he said, or it was said, that it was more about practicality, you know, and a kind of a more mathematical solution to a problem. Is that how he attempted, you know, all of his work?
I wouldn't say he was a mathematician, but he was good at analysing problems. I don't think that any of the road signs had, there was no place for any, may I say, arty-farty creative content. It was all there for a very distinct purpose, which was to help as many people as possible find their way, simple as that, and as safely as possible.
Lots of different designers, artists have come together to create different signs. We're stood in front of your sign now. It's a circular sign, but other than that, I'll leave you to describe what it is.
Well, yes, I got a phone call from Margaret saying, Ross, would you join in? She knows, of course, that I'm an industrial designer. I know a fair bit about graphic design, obviously, having come up through such a family, but it's not my practice. And so she said, well, Ross, do an industrial designer's take on the road signs. And I thought, God, that's a really hard one. And I got a bit philosophical, and I came up with my proposal, which is the question, why? And so it's an injunction to the person on the road to stop and think. It's not where you're going, but why are you going there? Ask yourself why you're going there. That's the road sign.
That was Ross Kinnear, and before that, Patrick Murphy, talking about London Designs Museum 50 years of the British Road Signs exhibition, which runs until the 25th of October.
Great design tells stories, and Squarespace's innovative website building tool is the perfect platform from which to tell them beautifully. Showcase your creativity, ideas, and business in style with Squarespace's unrivaled range of online products and services. To see how it could work for you and for a 10% discount, head to squarespace.com and enter the promotion code Monocle. Squarespace. Build it beautiful.
You're listening to Section D with me, David Pleasant. Headlines from the Hellenic world may be preoccupied with the economic crisis, but we at Monocle have uncovered more than a few reasons to be positive about the country's native makers and designers. London-based agency Sinister Sisters worked exclusively with Greek designers and brands and showcased five different brands as part of the London Design Week in a showroom in Soho. Among the brands on show was Salty Bag, a maker of accessories and travel goods from Corfu, as well as rather lovely coasters from Athenian brand A Future Perfect. Monocle's Fernando Augusto Pacheco stopped by to meet Konstantina Voluminea to find out more about the budding Greek design scene.
I want to start by saying that things in Greece are very, very hard, financially, society-wise, and it has been for quite a while. But the truth is that, in general, when you look at history, in difficult times, financially difficult times, there's always kind of clever things that people find to do and to... They become more creative, that's the thing, in difficult times. I think this is definitely... I mean, it's a nice thing to say and it kind of gives you hope, but it's also the reality. It's definitely the reality. So there is an entrepreneurial spirit that is rising, especially through young people right now in Greece. And this is... the main reason that motivated us to do that, because we wanted this to be diffused outside Greece. Yeah.
Well, thankfully for that. And shall we have a look at the products? I mean, you, let's start with this brand, which is a kind of basics. Can you tell us a bit more?
Sure. This brand is called We're Still Bold and Beautiful. They are from the island of Crete. They've been created by an architect and a graphic designer, so they kind of bring together their sort of skills to create this brand. It's basics, so basic shapes like t-shirts, t-shirt dresses, bodies, crop tops, but they are being reinterpreted through hand silk screen prints. And this is what makes these products unique.
I think we should move to some very special coasters, I have to say. I want one of those.
You will get one. So this brand is called A Future Perfect. They come from Athens. Again, it's two girls, two architects. Basically, going back to what we were discussing before, being architects in Athens at the moment, there was no possibility for them to work in construction because there is no construction. So they didn't have a job. So what they did, they used concrete, which is essentially a material you use to build houses, to create coasters. And these coasters basically are created by creating a mold of a city, of the historic center of a city, starting from Athens. And then using this mold, they create four coasters, and putting them together, they create the whole picture of the map. And then they can use the same technique to create coasters for London, for Stockholm, for Milan, for a variety of different cities. They have done that.
We're talking a lot about new young brands, but also there's another brand that is quite a classic, actually, already, but they're revamping now.
Yes.
Can you tell us a bit more?
Yeah. So this is Parthenis. Parthenis is a ready-to-wear brand coming from Athens. They opened a shop in Mykonos, I think it was in the 70s, if I'm not wrong. And this is what made the brand big in Europe and internationally, because Mykonos being a very like a tourist attraction, people used to go there for holiday and they used to buy Parthenis pieces and then going back to Europe and back to America. And this is how the brand, by word of mouth, really became quite big. Then there was a kind of a period of quietness from the brand. But now under the creative direction of the daughter, who is called Orsalia Parthenis, they have relaunched the brand. And what we are presenting here today is an edited selection of some basic cotton pieces inspired by the archive.
And I think we should move on to these beautiful bags from Salty Bag. It's being even featured in our own magazine. So.
Yes, that's true. They have been featured in Monaco. What we have here is accessories and travel goods brand. They're called Salty Bag, as you said. And they are indeed Salty Bags because they are created by upcycled decommissioned sails from boats. So each bag actually has a code, a number, that you can go and trace the story of the material, where it came from, like who donated it, basically. So you know the whole story. We have different collections. There's a classic collection, different sizes, beach bags. And then you can go to smaller things like clutch bags. But they're all made with great attention to detail. Every bag is unique. You can still see some marks on the fabric from the sails, but this is because they have been used. So this is part of the whole idea. The leather comes from Tuscany, from Florence. And I think the result is like a very, very nice premium brand with a very nice story to tell.
That was Fernando Augusto Pacheco there speaking to Constantina Vulimeneia as part of London Design Festival. You're listening to Section D with me, David Pleasant. From beach retreats and yachts to townhouses in New York and London, Christian Liegre has been creating comforting and refined interiors and furniture for over 30 years. The French designer rose to prominence in the 1990s when André Balage invited him to do the interiors of the Mercer Hotel in New York. And his style is known across the world and is recognised by commissions for Larry Gagosian and Karl Lagerfeld. To chime with London's Design Festival, the brand opened its second showroom in the British capital last week, right in the heart of Mayfair. Monocle's Gaia Lutz headed there during the launch to speak to the brand's CEO and former head of Jean-Paul Gaultier, Christophe Caillaud, about the business of design and why the brand plumped for another London showroom.
It's probably one of the only brands where the furniture originally and still created within an environment. And they have to work in this environment and they have to work together. So when you enter a showroom, it's not like entering a furniture store. It's you enter in a place where there is an ambience, where you can feel comfortable, where you can feel the inspiration of the 30 years of interior architecture in the company. So it's not rows of sofas or chairs. It's just different ambiences, different palette colors, which are created originally together and to work together.
Can you tell me a bit about this ambiance that Liegre so puts forth? It has a lot of presence, but obviously it also highlights it's very detailed and very delicate. Can you tell me a bit about how you would define the brand or the style?
I often hear people saying it's a minimalistic brand. For me, it's exactly the contrary. It's not because a piece looks simple that it's minimalistic. It's a lot of details that hopefully you cannot see, and which makes the products to be what they are. So maybe simple, comfortable, but definitely not minimalistic. So to go back to your question, I would say that the ambiences today probably of the brand and the product work on the contrast between shiny, glossy finishing, which we are really working on now, and other finishing which are matte and which are more rough, like textured woods. And it's the contrast between this shiny and matte things, this glossy, sometimes colors that we are introducing in the brand as well, which we didn't have in the past, which make the ambience that you can feel in the showroom today.
Amazing. And can you show me just maybe one or two of your favorite or most notable pieces?
This one is one of my favorite recent pieces. It's an armchair called the Shelter. You can see all the work on the wood and the mix of wood, leather, and bronze. We work on natural materials, the wood, the metal, the leather, the linen, all these kind of things together. But it's not only the preciousness of the leather or the woods which are giving the quality or the specificity of the products. This shelter is in Macassar ebony, but the first one that we designed was in a wood which is used by the carpenter to build the farm. The way it was lacquered, people would never know it was a wood that was used to build barns. So that's what I like in the brand, is that it's not only the quality of the products which makes the specificities of the pieces at the end, it's also the way they are treated, the way they are transformed, and the way they are mixed together. And it's also very comfortable. This is one of the specificities of the brand, is that we spend a lot of time to test the pieces in order to assess that they are comfortable. We don't want to have only pieces that would be in a museum. We want people to live in these pieces, to feel comfortable, to relax. And so we test the pieces. Sometimes one piece will go 2, 3, 4 times at the factory to change the bands of the shape, because we feel it's not comfortable, or the armrest will be higher, lower, until we think it works. We will be comfortable in this piece.
That was Gaia Lutz speaking to Christophe Caillaud, CEO of French interior design brand Christian Liegre. This is Section D with me, David Pleasant. Now, to finish the show, we leave our native shores of the UK and head to Vienna Design Week, which is now in its 9th instalment. Covering everything from interior design to fashion and architecture, the event kicked off on Friday last week and ends this Sunday. Our Vienna-based correspondent Alexei Korolev caught up with the festival's director, Lily Hollein, shortly before the opening. Lily gave Alexei an overview, as well as discussing what she thinks sets the Austrian capital apart and how the city can compete in such a crowded market.
I mean, one and Alexei Kovalev. You have to try.
Well, we've come, I'd say, pretty far in putting Vienna on the international map of design where it hadn't been for some time before. So when Thomas Tulge and I founded the festival, we did that out of the awareness that there was a small local scene, but more than that, also a city that has so many advantages and so many aspects that we thought that would be interesting to open up to an international design public.
And it has opened up. The Austrian capital today is home to a truly thriving design scene, brimming with both local and international talent.
Guten Morgen, herzlich willkommen. Vielen Dank für das, die ungebrochene Motivation.
One thing special about Vienna Design Week is that we are a cultural festival. We are not linked to any kind of fair or commercial background. We are responsible for a large part of the program in terms of curating it, commissioning it, and then the other part comes in by people who join the festival as program partners, where we still try to keep a selection that in the end tells a story that we stand behind. And I think something that also makes us different from many others is that we have enormously tiny budget. We are being helped by a number of public and private sponsors, so we have a, which is quite exemplary, 50-50 financing, 50% public money, 50% private money, and we have an overall cash budget of €500,000.
Right. Well, enough about money. Let's talk about design itself. So what are the topics this year?
We never have a topic, a theme in the festival. Something that comes into the festival more than ever is architecture. I think that now again is a time where the disciplines overlap more than ever, and this is also where we introduce more architecture to the festival. One important topic that changes the festival in its look and feel every year is the focus district. Vienna Design Week happens throughout the city, but the focus district is a different district in the city every year with very different atmospheres. So for instance, last year we had our Centrale, our main venue, at a district that is has a large diplomats quarter and is a living area. This year we go to the 10th district, it's a workers' district. This is something that we also try to look at in the festival, that you would catch these different atmospheres of the surrounding.
But it's not only the focus district that changes every year, it's also the guest country. This year, France. It's all part of a special side project called Passionswege, or Ways of Passion, in which international designers and architects are invited to come and work with Austrian manufacturers.
France approached us with the interest to be a guest country in Vienna Design Week, and of course France is an interesting design nation. And mentioning architecture, of course we are sitting in a building done by Jean Nouvel, and Dominique Perrault will be lecturing during the festival. And now, yeah, I think we have come to a point where we are on the ever-growing festival map for design in fall.
That was Monocle's Alexei Korolev speaking to Lily Hollein, director of Vienna Design Week, which runs in the Austrian capital until Sunday. And we'll be hearing more from Vienna Design Week on the next episode of Section D. And sadly, that's all we have time for on Section D with me, David Pleasant. We'll be back at the same time next week. If you've missed any of this week's show or for our back catalogue, you can head to monocle.com, SoundCloud or iTunes and listen again. The show was put together by Alex Funnell. You can contact me, the show's producer, David Pleasant, at dmp@monocle.com with any comments, queries, recommendations or questions. As always, thanks very much for listening and goodbye.